I gotta tell you, I really enjoyed your new album. I just thought it was really, it goes really well with some of your earlier work, but also stands on its own, and I feel like you did some really cool experimental stuff with instrumentals and things like that that I haven't heard in any of your previous work. So very cool.
Well, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, I did want to ask you, you know, there are a couple of major things that like stand out to me in terms of instrumentals, like in your song Ships. The album has such a great like acoustic feel to it, and then occasionally you get hit with like these instrumentals that work very well, but they're also kind of you know, they kind of contrast the other sounds, like
little surprises,
like the saxophone. What's that?
Yeah, little surprises.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was wondering where that came from, why that started to show up on this album, opposed to maybe some of the more acoustic stuff that you've done in the past.
Yeah, well, the sax solo specifically, that was something that I worked with a really great producer on the album called Howard Billerman in Montreal. And it was really nice kind of meeting of the minds, because it was pretty evenly split between sort of ideas that I had or kind of arrangements that I'd worked out with the band ahead of time, but then he also brought a lot to the table and kind of had suggestions that were a bit out of left field, or not out of left field, but things I wouldn't necessarily have thought of, or players that he had in mind. And he had a great sax guy come in and do some stuff. And it was funny too, because everyone, including the sax guy, everyone was like, I don't really like the saxophone normally. And then the sax player said the same thing. He was like, yeah, I'm not crazy about like those really saxy sounding kind of sax solos. But yeah, that was really wonderful. And it ended up being, cause he played like that one really kind of bombastic sax part, but then a lot of it, he had also like a soprano sax, and it was like, it provided a lot, like some of the other tunes, there's kind of more subtle textures and things like that. So anyway, to circle back to your question, I guess it was kind of a nice collaboration in that way, between more in my comfort zone, I guess, kind of more acoustic or more straight ahead arrangements. And then, some of it got a little more experimental, I think.
Yeah. Did you feel hesitant to start adding that layer into your work, or you know, did it take you hearing it for the first time, or did you buy in right away?
I think it was pretty organic, because it wasn't anything like I feel like it came together in a really natural way. There was nothing that sounded to me too crazy, and it was all like and again, a lot of it was pretty subtle, like kind of textural little details. So no, I feel like it, to me, when I hear it, it all flows really nicely. There was nothing that was it seemed all to fit together. And like I said, it was, I mean, it's kind of good for me, because I tend to be a bit of a control freak, and I do like to work out, like in some cases I had a real vision of what I wanted the finished thing to be, in which case it wasn't like there wasn't really any tension between those two things. Like I would have ideas, and then the producer had ideas. Players would kind of come in and try stuff, and it was pretty loose process. And we were kind of all there trying stuff. Like if someone came in, we would kind of at the last minute say, oh, why don't you try something on this song, and just kind of see what happens. So yeah, it felt pretty organic.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, it definitely works well together. It's cool because before I had even approached that part of the song, when I was listening to it, I really got this feel, and I get this a lot from your music, of like the sirens in Greek mythology, like luring you in. And
ooh.
And it just, or like, if you've ever seen Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah.
So that was like based on the Odyssey, and like those women who were like on the rocks were kind of representing right. the sirens, like luring the guys in. And it just had that like really like angelic sound to it. And it's like completely drawing me in. And then like a wave crashing in with that saxophone solo. I just thought it was a really cool balance and worked really well together.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, there's, it's funny you said that, because there's a, one of the tunes, there's a part where I was doing what I thought was a siren, like, so there's a line, like the lyric is, what is it? Something about hearing the siren song of a long goodbye. And there, and on the part where it says siren, I was doing this like siren-y noise, like a, like, I don't know, the third, I guess, up and down, like that.
Yeah.
And I thought it was clever. I was like, it sounds like a siren, like a, as in an ambulance, whatever. And it took, it was just, I mean, I thought it was funny, because nobody else thought it sounded like a siren. It just sounds like a weird vocal part. So it's kind of an inside joke just for only me, and nobody else thinks it's funny, but.
Hey, listen, I'm a fan. I'm a huge.
You're into the siren.
I'm
but like,
super into
I'm
it.
I'm curious, because when you said siren, I was like, oh, maybe he noticed that one part, but no, I don't think anyone will ever think that it sounds like a siren.
Let's just pretend that if you hadn't brought it up, that's where I was going next. I'm looking at my notes and I have it here. It was like, you definitely, even when you just did it now, I had to like peek out the window to make sure an ambulance hadn't pulled up.
Well, it's something that I think it's just a private thing for myself as a writer, but I'm very interested in, I think it's called word painting in music, when you do, for example, if you say the word high and it's like a really high note, that's something that happens in the album, or like, you know what I mean? Like the lyrics kind of echoing whatever musical phrasing is happening, that kind of stuff. Again, I don't think it's something people would pick up on, but I'm kind of into being like a formalist that way. So there's a lot of stuff like that on the album, just these little moments that, again, to me, it's just kind of inside joke, or maybe it's not a joke, but
it's like an Easter egg, like
these little Easter eggs. Yeah, exactly.
You know, like after somebody watches a movie and like the director will put in little things that you may not notice, but it's like, oh, this is an ode to the Maltese Falcon or whatever.
Exactly.
I love
for
that.
For the hardcore fans.
Yes. I think you're going to have like a cult following just based on that little siren part, because I love that kind of stuff.
Nice.
So this brings me to something that I thought we would get to much later in the podcast, because it has a real potential to take us way out there, but I'm going to go for it anyway, because of the language that you've used so far, like texture, like musical painting. And early on the album, you have this song, I See Music. And I was just having this really interesting conversation with somebody on this podcast about synesthesia.
Right.
And I'm curious if it's something that maybe you have, or something that you're fascinated with, just because throughout the album, that song specifically, there just seems to be this real understanding or real vision of music in more than a audible sense, like a very visual sense. And I'm curious if that's something that you feel you have, or if it's just something that fascinates you.
Yeah, totally. I don't think that I am a synesthete, but I find it so fascinating. And I think even what I was just saying, actually, yeah, about the kind of language, the way that you can, that music can kind of translate into other modes, I feel mm-hmm. like that is kind of in the same vein for sure. I don't think I have synesthesia, but there's lots of forms of it too. Like I've kind of gone down rabbit holes reading about it, and there's stuff like like kind of seeing music as color, which is sort of what that song is about. And then also has kind of that same quality, like there'll be a part about spinning and then the music, the melody kind of spins in some way or something like that. But there's all kinds of weird synesthesia things, like numbers, like associating numbers with gender or stuff like that, like different kinds of ways of like perceiving one thing through the lens of another thing or through another mode. Anyway.
Yeah, I guess I should explain, I guess try to explain to listeners who may not know already, even though I'm not qualified to. Synesthesia is I almost said affliction, but I don't think it's an affliction. It's like where a sense, where you can perceive something with multiple senses, or at least not the same sense that it's typically perceived with. Commonly, I think it's like in music where you can hear music and see it as like shapes. But does that sound right to you? Or am I getting it wrong?
No, I think you nailed it. Yeah, it's seeing or experiencing one sense through another sense. So yeah, seeing music is a common one that people talk about, and or hearing colors or whatever, like having a perception of one, something that's associated with one sense, like seeing music, for example. Yeah, I think you did a better job of
it. No, that was it. That was it. I think a dictionary podcast is like definitely in our future.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's so interesting because to me, it kind of reveals that this, it's kind of a false separation in a way. Like all the senses are not so separate as we might think of them as being, you know?
Oh, I like where that's going. yeah, see, it seemed like you definitely were fleshing that idea out in that song, I See Music, one with the title, but also I'm curious about the way that you structured the song, because it really had like a multi-dimensional feel to it. So like you had like the main chorus, but then at the same time, it almost felt like there was like distance in the in like the background vocals or like the instrumentals, where it just felt like if I was sitting in a room listening to that, it would almost feel like the music was coming from different places. And to me, that made it feel like, it made it feel somewhat like shapes. Maybe that's just because I was already obsessing over this. As soon as I saw that and started to hear it, I was like, oh, this is synesthesia. I'm psyched. But
yeah. Oh, that's so lovely.
Maybe I was just projecting, but did that have something to do with the way that you structured the song? And how did you come up with the sounds that were in that one?
Well, I think the arrangement is pretty simple. It's me playing the piano, which is not my main instrument. There's two piano songs on this record, and so maybe that's part of it, because it's like a less familiar instrument for sure. And then the most of the song is just me and the upright bass, and then there's this like interlude part that's like a kind of a bridge or like a B part that goes like a bunch of horns come in. But the way that I thought of the structure was like as a love song, because it's kind of this metaphor of synesthesia, obviously, but then also it's kind of about finding your way to love. It's kind of cheesy, but kind of like, I'm kind of deliberately cheesy is sort of how I saw it, as being like, almost like an old, what would you call it? Like an old musical or something, like a number from a, you know, like from a cheesy, like from a Disney movie, or like an old, you know, song and dance kind of number. I guess that's something I was interested in too, kind of on the same theme, that you're sort of the way that synesthesia is like translating from one sense to another sense, and that a love song as a trope is kind of works in a similar way, like you're translating these feelings into
Oh,
into
yeah.
the medium of song, and you're sort of, and it's like a bit cheeseball, but like in a nice way. So just to say, I kind of saw the story of the song going along with that structure, I guess.
Yeah, that's really cool. So you were saying that just the act of taking an emotion, and in this case, love or feeling, and in translating that into a different medium other than the act of love, or however. Oh, man, this is getting
Yeah,
complicated. But
exactly.
yeah. I didn't realize how easily I was going to get lost on that path. But
I know,
yeah.
and this is all after the fact. I feel like when I'm writing the song, I'm not like composing a thesis about, perception and ontology and stuff like that. But I do think it's interesting to me, just like as a trope, this idea of like harmony and music and these kind of language that we use to talk about love, because you don't really have the language to express those kind of feelings, so you're
Right.
kind of always grasping at something beyond words,
Just
more than words.
demonstrated by my word salad 2 seconds ago. Yeah, wow, that's really interesting. That is so cool. Yeah, I think it's when you try to distill a feeling of any kind, and then somehow turn it into a different medium, like music or like a, like a scene in a movie. It really is undergoing this complicated process that we like that we do, this alchemy that we don't really think about because it's just like the easiest way to digest it.
Totally. Yep.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting. Did you feel like there was a through line or like a theme on this album? Because like to me, a lot of the songs have this kind of feeling of like hope or like putting pieces back together or like recovering. And at the same time, the album is called like Stolen Time, which is kind of opposed, or I guess in a sense like opposed to that, opposed to what I was getting from the album. Am I wrong about
Oh.
kind of what I was feeling with that album, or I don't know, is any of what I'm saying making sense at all?
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. I mean, yeah, there, I think for sure, again, more so after the fact, but I definitely see this theme of recovery running through all the songs in different ways like that. So the title Stolen Time I took from I've been kind of trying to like I said, I'm not piano's not my main instrument, and I never studied music, but during the pandemic one of my hobbies was to like get music books from the library, and I was trying to learn a bit more theory and kind of learn to read music a bit more. And so anyway, I was doing these piano exercises, and one of the musical terms that I guess I'd kind of heard before, but the concept of tempo rubato, which means, I think literally means stolen time, but it's kind of that how would you define it? Like draw, like kind of having a looser time, like slowing down, like kind of a moment out of time, kind of. Oh my goodness! See, this is I really don't have the formal musical training, but.
Oh, that's okay. Me either. I have no musical ability whatsoever. So I'm just
But
taking
anyways,
notes.
I just read this term. It has nothing to do with the album necessarily, but I, again, being so interested in the kind of the language of this stuff, the concept of stolen time, meaning basically like taking a liberty with the rhythm, right? Like instead of having this
Oh,
lockstep
cool.
metronome rhythm, it's when you have kind of have a looser thing and kind of a push pull. And it was sort of appropriate with the record because, we recorded it in a pretty loose way with no click track, and it was recorded mostly live off the floor and stuff. So I like that title, but then it also fits with the theme. I guess what we were talking about a moment ago as far as synesthesia or sort of translating, like, you know, musical concepts with emotional concepts. Anyway, and then as far as the recovery theme, like, I guess that feeling, you know, I didn't necessarily intend it this way, but we've all kind of been through this really crazy event the last couple of years, and just that feeling of recovery in terms of, it's like this hopeful thing, but it's kind of bittersweet because, you know, maybe you've lost time in the process, or you have regret, or you're sort of, yeah, I'm not sure. I was making this up, but I kind of like that sort of bittersweet thing, you know, that it's like there's a hopefulness to it, but it's always a little bit, you know, like recovery is always, it's always temporary. You know, you're always going to have something else to go through next. Like you're kind of okay for a minute, but then something else comes along. So yeah, I don't know how that all fits together, but I kind of liked the concept of stolen time as relating in some way to all those elements.
Yeah, it's really cool because, like you said, during this time, everybody's been going through, you know, been going through different things, and a lot of people feel like time has been stolen from them in some ways, you know, like a lot of people, especially in the music scene or any, you know what, any scene, to be honest.
Exactly.
Like anybody who had momentum going into this decade felt that momentum like really drop. So, you know, when I first learned about this album, I saw the title, I was like, oh man, I can relate already. And then when I listened to it, it definitely didn't meet like what my expectation based on the title was. And it had this like more hopeful message while still being bittersweet. But I guess it kind of goes to your point that like, in order to be, you know, you're always recovering, and like, in order to be hopeful, there has to be some reason to not have hope at one point or time or another.
Right, right, for sure.
Yeah, and I just thought that came through really well, and to hear kind of this other side of what stolen time could mean, I think is very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of just like the sound of it too. Oh, and I guess one of the songs is called "Stolen Time." I didn't think about that either, because I didn't intend that to be like a title track necessarily. I just liked the title for all those reasons. I think it's a bit ambiguous, and speaks to a lot of those themes in a indirect way.
Yeah, I think it definitely does, and it's just cool to know that there are different, it's kind of like another Easter egg where there's a different meaning than maybe what you were expecting, or at least there's something else from it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the song, I guess that song is about just kind of being, it's sort of stealing time in the sense that like you're sort of mortgaging your future, like just have those really lazy kind of narcotic days of where you feel like you're just kind of getting away with something, but for how long?
Yeah, when you say like getting away with something, what do you mean?
Like I think I was thinking of a specific time in my life where I was like living a life of leisure for, you know, like during the summertime or something like this, where you're just kind of sitting by the water and day drinking or whatever it is, like being lazy. And it's kind of a, you know, in a way it's kind of a love letter to that time, but it's also, to me, there's kind of like this dark cloud sort of hanging over the proceedings where, you know, you're gonna pay the price at some point. You're gonna be hungover, or you're gonna like wake up at the end of the summer and realize you've like, you know, let all your responsibilities kind of wither on the vine, or that kind of thing. So just another sense of stolen time, I guess.
Yeah.
But then in that context, it's like me stealing time. Like I'm stealing this time from my future self.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to put it, like stealing time from your future self. I can totally relate, because I think my default mode, even though maybe an outsider wouldn't realize this about me, like my default mode is to be lazy. Like I keep myself, I think that's true for a lot of people, but maybe everything in my life seems to be extremes, you know? So like, if it's going to be a lazy day, it's going to be the laziest day, you know?
Right, right.
And, and yeah, like what I asked you about it, because like you said, you feel like you're getting away with something, and like, I can totally trick myself into doing that. It's like, oh yeah, you know, you needed a day, and like, oh, maybe I'll just take a, you know, I'll just like scroll on my phone for a second, and then there goes a day. And I'm like, holy shit. Ooh. You know, it's like,
totally.
It's like, yeah, I did that and there aren't any immediate consequences, but like, it wasn't for free. Like it cost me a day.
Right.
Which is so limited. Like, I don't know. I had this weird thought. Sorry, I'm going on a little bit of a tangent, but like, I had this weird thought the other day where I was kind of having one of those moments, you know, these like lazy moments. And I was watching a commercial and just like in my head, like getting so impatient because I just wanted to like, I'm watching the clock tick down on YouTube, like before I can skip this commercial. And I'm like thinking, oh man, like I just want this to be done so I can skip this. And then I was thinking like, man, it's going to be so weird when I'm dying. And I'm like, huh, there were moments like that where I was like, oh, I wish time would go faster.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No, it's scary stuff. I think about that all the time, especially because I feel like I've thought about that a lot in the context of like working, like when you have a job where it feels like all day you're just watching the clock, or yes, like watching. And it's like haunting to me now to think about those times of like just wishing the time away.
Yeah.
It's pretty horrifying, but I think we've all been there.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, it sounds like you have a really interesting way of writing songs. Do you base, like, does the music come from a feeling or experiences, and then you flush it out and realize afterwards what you were trying to, like, what you were trying to do with the song? Or do you have an idea of like a subject you want to dive into and then flush it out in real time?
Like way more the first thing for sure. Yeah, I have no idea what I'm gonna write about, and then again, maybe that's why I'm so interested in that kind of synesthesia idea. But yeah, it's definitely more starts with a feeling, and then a melody, and then eventually, like way later, I'll kind of put lyrics to it and try to figure out what the song is about.
Wow. So you find like, does it usually come from an emotion and then you try to pair a melody with whatever you're feeling, happy, sad, or, you know, whatever it is?
Yeah, exactly. So if there, so in so far as there's a theme, yeah, it'll be like, you know, an emotion or kind of a vibe.
Yeah. Is there any times that like stick out in your mind where you were having an experience, positive, negative, whatever, and you felt like it was one of these moments that maybe the music started to come to you in that moment, you know, like kind of when you catch yourself like, oh damn, this is a great day, or like, man, this fucking blows. Like did the music,
yeah.
Can you think of any moments where the melody started to come to you, or like the beginnings of a song in real time, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, on one of the songs on the record, called Sewage. That song I wrote last spring. My partner was having heart surgery.
Oh man.
He's doing great now, but it was a real surprise. He's like a healthy, relatively young dude, and he was at the time kind of going for all these tests, and it was one of those things where I don't think I said this, but in my mind I was like, you know, it's probably nothing, you're probably fine, like everything, you know, you want to get these things checked out. But anyway, and then it sort of kept escalating to the point where he had to have open heart surgery. And it was really scary. But I remember feeling this kind of bitter feeling. It was almost like I could almost taste it. It was like this almost metallic, just kind of horror kind of feeling. And I don't know why I'm laughing. I guess it's usually more like it's usually negative emotions. I guess, like, I feel like if I'm having like a wonderful day, I'll probably won't sit down and write a song. Whereas like right. when I'm having this existential dread, that's when. But that was one where it really, I remember just writing the song just in the air. Like I didn't have an instrument or anything. I kind of had this tune. Normally I write with a guitar or sit down at the piano, but this was like, it was just this really bitter, I just remember it so distinctly, actually, because it kind of translated directly to the song. I think I even wrote lyrics to it, which I don't normally do necessarily. I wrote all these lyrics. I almost was like, I don't even want to write this song. Like, I don't want to necessarily use it because I felt like it was so ugly to me.
Mm.
But then the melody is kind of almost kind of pretty but mournful. And the first line of the song is, I dreamed I saw my baby with sewage in his veins. And I had this idea of sewage in someone's veins. It was just this kind of like nauseous, like gross feeling. That's what I was trying to capture in the song. So, you know, it's another upbeat banger for me, I guess. But that was an example. Like, that's the first thing I thought of when you asked me that, because it was so vivid in terms of like, yeah, like, again, I guess with the back to the synesthesia scene, but yeah, it felt like just translating this gross feeling like directly into a song. And then I kind of felt better.
Yeah, well, hey, listen, I
cathartic.
Totally yeah, well, sure. I mean, it would make sense that the things that are, you know, positive in your life or in any creative's life aren't going to be the things that require the attention of an activity like writing or contemplation, you know, to work through. It's like, that was good, so cool. But like mm-hmm. when things are bad, it's like, man, this really needs like attention, or this is like taking up a lot of space in my mind and needs to be worked through.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I imagine an event as traumatic as that and as scary as that is having like your partner go through something so unexpected. Yeah. Probably takes a lot of space in your mind. And then when you have,
I think I was, papers, I feel like I was pissed off about, now I'm remembering this thing. Cause I feel like I was pissed off actually. Like I felt this weird kind of anger about the whole thing.
I don't know
if that comes.
What were you gonna say? You don't know if it comes.
Well, I'm just wondering if that got lost. If that kind of, I'm asking myself if that comes across in the finished thing. But I mean, that some of the songs are, like you said, kind of hopeful. Or I feel like there are maybe I do sometimes write from more of a happier place as well. But yeah, usually the extremes, I guess, on either side.
Well, right. I mean, that's what's cool is that I think when you, the only reason things can feel like they're recovering is because they went bad in the first place. And then
exactly
with this album, like I was talking about before, like it does feel uplifting in a sense, you know, but you go through the full spectrum. I feel like in order to I'm repeating myself a million times, but like with this album, you put us in a place where it's like, okay, yeah, you start us out with, you know, a vision of sewage in the veins, and like it's only up from there, you know, like like you put us in a place where we need to work through or get through. And that's what you're doing as a songwriter too, if, you know, from what it sounds like. It's like you have a problem and then you work through it. And then, so we get to watch you show your work. Like, so we don't have to, but you know, whenever we have the traumatic thing that's happening in our life, we can just look and be like, oh, Abigail went through it too. And this is where she started and this is where she ends. And it's all encapsulated in a song.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. And I think that's what I'm drawn to as a listener so much too. So maybe that's why it kind of goes into the writing process for sure.
Another example on this album that I think kind of captures this hopeful sense, and I'm willing to be 100% wrong on that, is how you start the album with Land of Plenty. Now, like, I'm an American, and I talk to a lot of folk and Americana songwriters, and sometimes there is really patriotic notions about the United States, and sometimes it's ironic. You know, it's like ironic patriotism.
Right.
I may be wrong. I didn't feel like it was ironic in your song. It felt like genuine patriotism, which I know can be dangerous, I guess, but I don't know if I'm wrong about that or if that was your intention.
I don't know if I know either my intention, what my intention was. I think it's genuine, but once again, I keep saying this word, but I think to me it's bittersweet because it's genuine, but it's like, yeah, like I think I was definitely raised, like I'm kind of the, I guess, second or third, you know, generation living in Canada. And a lot of my family would have come here like right after World War II. They were like Jews in Eastern Europe.
So oh, no
not,
way.
Not a lot of them. Yeah, so it was that thing of like not many of the family had survived, and coming to Canada, it was like the promised land, you know. But at the same time, those people, like my grandparents, would have come here like penniless and alone and had a really hard life and faced a lot of bullshit. And so I think it's that I just feel like we were definitely raised with that idea that we're so lucky to be here, but it's not a Pollyanna view of this. It's not like our society's perfect or even like that great. Like it's sort of to be clear eyed about all the problems with your society, but to still feel like very fortunate. Like, I definitely think I was raised with the idea that like we just literally had won the lottery of life by being, you know, being born somewhere where you wouldn't be persecuted and you kind of had, you know, a certain amount of like safety, I guess. But at the same time, it wasn't, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not like a naive view. Like there would have been so much hardship in those communities. And so, and not even that, like just even making the journey and leaving your whole life behind, it's so heartbreaking. And the people that don't make it, you know what I mean? So I feel like that's kind of all in there for me as well. And so it's like, it's genuine. It's not, it's not necessarily ironic, but it's like there's kind of that darkness there to me that balances out the sweetness of it.
I think that totally comes through. And just to be...
Okay, good.
just to be clear, like when I say it was patriotic, like I didn't mean in the sense of like a propagandist anthem or anything like that, right? Like, and when I talk about ironic, it's almost like, you know, Bruce Springsteen born in the USA. That's ironic, right? Like,
right, right.
That's like...
Yep.
And a lot of people do that, and that's fine. It's just like with this one, but it's also fine to be like proud too. you know, because
yeah.
Like it's not one or the other. Like, you know, I live in the United States, you live in Canada. It's not North Korea. Like North Korea is bad. Okay. And like with the United States, there's a lot wrong, but there's a lot right. And in Canada, there's a lot wrong and there's a lot right. And like to have a really, I think, nuanced song like you did, it it does that very well of balancing like this kind of internal battle between, you know, my ancestors came here and this was like winning the lottery in a place where it could have been a mortal catastrophe in Europe during the 1940s, where you come here and even if you're penniless, it's still much better than the alternative. And it's just a really interesting and deep song that I loved a lot and was hopeful and kind of sad at the same time.
Cool. Yeah. It's also too, like, I think it's a bit ambiguous because I'm not sure when I think about that song, I'm not clear if the kind of protagonist narrator, like, do they actually make it to the land of plenty? It feels like it's this thing they're kind of aiming for or they're yearning for. And it's a bit, I think it's a bit open-ended as to whether, like, is the land of plenty kind of, again, with that recovery theme, like, do you ever really get there? Or is it just kind of this, you know, this city on a hill, like it's something you're striving towards, but you don't necessarily, you can't ever quite lock it down, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like you and your music are very like process oriented, which is something that I love. And like, to me, everything is a process. Like nothing is stagnant. Like it's a good process or a bad process or an indifferent process, but like society is a process. Like it's not done. Like it's still ongoing. Exactly. Let's, you know, and like humans, the best humans and the worst humans are still a process. You know, it's not stagnant.
The more perfect union.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Nailed it. this might be like a shameless segue, but we just mentioned Bruce Springsteen. I don't have very smooth segues often, so I'm just going to roll with it. We were just talking about Born in the USA with Bruce Springsteen. In one of the songs on the album, Old Flame, I felt a little like I'm on fire vibes from that.
Right.
was that intentional? Or was it part of the songwriting process? Did you find inspiration from Bruce Springsteen, or was it independent?
I mean, I'm not made of stone. Obviously, I find obviously I love The Boss so much. It wasn't intentional, but yeah, I kind of again loved this this fire theme. Like again, this kind of really well-worn love song kind of trope. So that was something I was thinking about a little bit. I wasn't thinking of it in terms of Springsteen really. And then a friend of mine kind of said something about that. And I thought, oh yeah, I could, like, again, after the fact, I could definitely kind of see that. That's the song with the siren part in it too. So.
Oh yeah.
Fire truck.
exactly. I was just going to say that. I was like, I got some real fire truck vibes from that one.
And actually this song, because I was thinking so much about this love song cliche idea, like that song has, there's like a couple of other love song titles, like the, there's a line about a ghost of a smile, which is a Pogue song. And there's like a Gasoline and Matches is a song. Like there's a couple little like again, it's not that anyone would ever, like, unless someone's going to do a real deep reading analysis of the song, but I was kind of definitely thinking about that of pulling from these different kind of love song ideas down through the ages.
I did want to, you know, I don't feel like we covered synesthesia nearly enough, and I wanted to ask you about the music video that you guys put out for Pines, and you chose to do it as an animation, which was so cool, and I thought like represented the song in a way that you couldn't do with live action. What went into making that and choosing to do it through animation?
Yeah, I think Well, to me, the song, it was a really wonderful director and animator from Colombia called Tatiana Vaca, who worked on the video, and she and I chatted about it a bit. And kind of like you said, it's like pretty abstract. And actually, we were just talking about this, that sort of animation maybe has that in common with songwriting in some way, that you can go to a really abstract place where it's, you know what I mean? It's not, you're not constrained by the physical world. And so the way the video unfolds is it's kind of representing the lyrics, and then there's a lot of morphing imagery. So like the pines kind of turning into snowflakes, turning into whatever. And yeah, I just love that kind of flow to it, and the way that she sort of marries the image with the music was really cool. And yeah, I love how it turned out. To me, the song too, I thought of it as being, is the lyrics are so simple. It's sort of a song about taking a walk in the woods and just sort of the scenery. And so I loved the almost storybook, like it's almost like a children's book
Yeah, like a
kind
grim
of
fairy tale.
illustration style. Yeah, exactly. And just that there's so much imagery in the song. That's kind of almost all there is. And so I loved that, again, that process of like translation from the song into the visual world.
Yeah, I noticed throughout the album there is like a lot of vivid imagery and specifically like vivid imagery of the natural world, like walking through the woods and the way that you describe the ocean and ships. Do you have like a pretty consistent relationship with nature, like the outdoors? Do you spend a lot of time there, or do you use it for inspiration and songwriting?
Yeah, totally. It's definitely a go-to as far as writing. And I'm really lucky to spend a lot of time. Like I wrote that song in particular. I was doing a writing retreat in Banff, Alberta, in the Rockies. And
Oh, cool.
oh my goodness, so beautiful. And actually, I was supposed to go back there this past. Last month, and the residency was canceled because of the latest kind of COVID wave. So I ended up, this was, inc I was incredibly lucky to be able to do this, but I basically just rented a cabin in the woods for a couple of weeks to work on songs. And it's partly that kind of getting away from distractions and unplugging and stuff like that. I do tend to write a lot too, just like walking. I find that kind of andante pace, another music term I picked up, like walk, kind of a walking pace. And I find like something about that rhythm is really nice for sort of getting a melody lodged in your head. And I do a lot of hiking, and usually do a canoe trip once a year, very Canadian, like just in the back country. So again, it's like very isolated, which is nice. And yeah, I try to go down to the water. Even like living in Toronto, there's even, yeah, like kind of urban, trails and things where you can feel like you're out of the city despite living in a very urban environment.
Sure. Yeah, so when you do those trips, or like when you did you say you rented a cabin in Banff? Do you do that solo, or do you keep people around you?
Well, yeah, I guess I often go kind of camping with my partner or friends. Like I just spent the weekend in Muskoka, like just north of Toronto, with a couple friends, cross-country skiing
Oh, cool.
and
I
stuff
went
like
skiing last
that.
weekend too.
Oh man, how's the snow there? I guess you're on basically the same.
Sorry to divert, but yeah,
Yeah.
we went to Stowe, Vermont over the weekend, and we actually
Ooh.
drove on Friday, like right in the heart of that winter storm Landon.
Yeah.
And what was supposed to be like 4 hours was 8+ hours to get there,
Oh boy.
but it was worth it, man. So incredible. Yeah, Stowe skiing was amazing.
Yeah, we went to downhill skiing or cross country?
It was downhill skiing, which I'm not nearly good enough to be in Stow for, but did it anyway.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, we ended up renting. It's kind of a long story, but there's like a summer camp that they sometimes have, like, you know, programming, like they'll have a weekend where you can come and stay. But that's all been shut down the last couple of years because of COVID. And so we ended up just renting one of the cabins on their property. And we had this whole huge summer camp to ourselves. And there's like trails in the woods. They would like go out and groom the ski trails, cross country trails, like just for us, basically.
Oh, no way.
And we had snowshoes. It was pretty bonkers. It was really beautiful. And it's nice too because the winter here is so cold. It's fun when you can actually, you know, actually enjoy it.
Yeah, you got to do something.
It doesn't crazy. Sound like a fun. Yeah, driving is not always the most fun. But anyway, so yeah, I definitely feel like, it's really. It's something I'm really grateful for, being able to get away and spend time kind of working on music. The thing in Banff was at the Banff Center, which is like an arts center where you go and it's nice. It's kind of the best of both worlds as far as you have a lot of solitude and time to work on your own stuff, but then you're also in a really great community. And if you want to interact with people, or there's usually opportunities for workshops or kind of collaboration and stuff like that. So I really like that balance because I do tend to be such a loner. I really like to be, especially during the writing process, get a lot of me time. And then, but at the same time, it's nice to kind of bust out of your comfort zone and have other ideas and see what other people are working on. And
yeah, it sounds like a perfect like creativity incubator, like to have places to go alone, which is necessary. But I tend to be somewhat of a loner myself. And when I'm working on projects, I can never believe how just having someone to project the ideas to, you know, to just like have something to bounce off of beside the walls of my head, like
for sure.
How much that helps.
Totally.
You know, it's really interesting. It made me think of something earlier where I was helping a friend with a project, and you were talking about how like the themes and some of these things that come up in your music don't really appear to you until later. And like, you know, in this case, I was working on a script with a friend, and like when we came up with some solution, you know, some kind of like logistical solution for the story, then we were like afterwards like, oh my god, that works on a thematic level too because of this and this. And I just find that really interesting when you can look at something that you've done in hindsight and realize how many different levels it works on.
Nice. Yeah for sure.
So the album comes out in April, correct?
Yep, April 22nd, 2022.
Awesome. And then, so what's next for you after this album is out, and where do you go from here?
Well, I'm hoping to be touring again soon. So hopefully, fingers crossed, to be doing some festivals again this summer. And I haven't been on the road almost at all for the last couple of years. So I'm going to South by Southwest for the first time this year, and
congratulations
coming up.
That's amazing.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm have you been?
I haven't, but that when that got canceled, that's when I knew the pandemic was a thing.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. And it's, I've been kind of waiting, like, to be honest, because I thought it was possibly going to get canceled this year. And anyway, it looks like we're moving ahead. I'm a little scared, to be honest. I mean, I haven't really interacted with a large number of people for several years now, so it'll be interesting to see how it goes. But it'll be really cool. I'm excited to see live music again too, because that's been really for all of us. Been something I really I'm looking forward to getting back to. So yeah, hopefully we'll be hitting the road soon.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that you were saying that you're like a little bit nervous about being in front of a bunch of live people again, because your streaming numbers are absolutely insane. Like, I think I saw that you've had like over 13 million streams on Spotify. And when you think about how many people that would be performing in front of, how no matter what arena you could possibly ever find yourself performing in, you could never fill it with that many people, right? Like,
that's true.
Or it could never hold that many people is a better way to say it.
But I don't have to talk to those people.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You don't have to talk to those people either, though.
I have no social anxiety. No, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah, no, it's a lot of streaming. But who's counting?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's cool. I'm excited. I'm excited to hear how Southwest goes, and excited to hopefully see you play one time, you know, in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
Once touring's back up, are you planning on staying in Canada, or are you going to be in the United States as well, aside from Southwest?
Well, I'm planning to be down in the States for sure over the summer, and then we'll see. I think I have a visa till the end of this year, so
sorry.
I'd like to get back to
I missed what you said at the end there.
Yeah, I'm hoping to be back in the States a lot more. I was starting to play more in the U.S., especially like in the Northeast and a little bit in the Pacific Northwest. And again, prior to the pandemic, I had a lot of tours planned. So I'm hoping to be back in the States more over the next year. And then I'd really like to go back to Europe and the U.K. as well. So we'll see what happens.
Awesome. Well, hey, Abigail, where's the best place for people to keep up with you, to get to listen to the new album, and follow up with your tour dates?
My website is abigaillapelle.com, and I'm on all the social platforms at Abigail Lapelle, which is, should I spell it? It's ABIGAILLAPELL.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, great. Hey, I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too.
It's been really cool to get a glimpse into your mind and see the sounds of shapes or the shapes of sounds.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks so much for chatting. It's really nice talking with you.
Awesome. Well, anytime.
Walk through the park.
All right. Thanks for listening. And thanks to Abigail for doing the show. Be sure to stick around to the end, where we are going to be having the track Pines play us out. If you'd like to support Abigail, head to our website, abigaillapelle.com. Grab yourself a physical copy of that new album, Stolen Time, and find some dates where she's going to be touring near you. As you know by now, the best way to support musicians that you love is to buy physical copies of their work and support them live in concert. If you'd like to support us, you can head to our website, setlist.community. That's where you're going to find all of our previous podcasts, our blog posts, and our merchandise. We love the feedback and the support, so if you do feel compelled, please leave us a review, a comment, subscribe. You know the deal. All the feedback helps us know we're doing okay and what we can improve on. So thanks for that, and please enjoy Pines by Abigail Lapelle. Catch you next time. Peace. Thank you.